Come on, Michael, you're interrupting.
You're kidding me! God! You say radon is silent but deadly, and then you expect me not to make farting noises with my mouth? What is this?
Please sit down.
You know what? We're not gonna die of radon. We're gonna die of boredom.
Yeah.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss here with you. Maybe the day after, if we can get this up in time, the day after the Giants' week one loss to the Denver Broncos, one in which we qualified last week as a must-win game. They got utterly embarrassed at home. I'm going to skip the housekeeping this week. If you're a listener, it's because you've been listening long enough, you know where to find us. If you're a new listener, it's probably because you found us through one of our Twitters. No need to rehash that. So I'll start this episode off by throwing it to you, Weiss, because I think out of the two of us, you had reasonable expectations for the team given some of their offseason moves. I was a bit more negative, but I think you probably represent a very big portion of the fan base where, don't get me wrong, we're all tired of losing. But given how far they are supposed to be in their quote-unquote rebuild, the moves they made in the offseason, this loss stung probably especially hard given some preseason predictions. So I'm going to throw it to you and let you run with it to start.
Yeah, I think I'll start by apologizing to you. You were right.
No. We're not doing this. There's no... I admit on Twitter I can be arrogant sometimes, and I'll take my victory laps when I can take them, because I do get a lot of shit for a lot of tweets that I do truly believe in. A lot of people think they're shtick, like when I called Teddy Bridgewater a massive upgrade to Drew Lock, and look what fucking happened. So I'll take my victory laps where I can get them. Right now we are all on the same team, and it seems that even the day after this loss, the fan base is very much united in their frustration. Okay, so there's going to be no apologies. There's going to be no "I'm right, you're wrong." You go. Forget the apology.
Where to start? The Giants are. I feel like over the last 4 years, I've used every single cliche or metaphor to describe.
Yeah, you and Joe Judge both.
This is just a continuation of what we saw last year. The Giants are. It's like they're a house, but this year they just have brand new cars, like new sports cars. But it's the
same. It's like that
house.
Meme that I tweeted out. Yeah. That Bugatti in the rundown house.
Yeah. Exactly. Like where do you want to begin? The offense. I mean, you guys have seen my timeline. Look, Jason Garrett. I am a believer in continuity. Believe it or not, I do think continuity is important. But this is not continuity. This is malpractice. Like, this guy's offense is broken. And there's enough of a enough evidence there where you can make that conclusion. It's an outdated system. It's a broken system. It's a philosophical issues. It just doesn't work. And he is, like, his play calling sucks, but his philosophy is even worse. The way these receivers run routes. I mean, I'm watching this game, and I actually rewatched it, the offensive plays, because I actually wanted to watch the offensive line. But then I started paying attention to some of these route concepts, and I'm like, holy shit, like, this is really bad. You cannot win this way.
Sticks.
And I was saying that, yeah, and I'm saying this, and then I see people responding to me saying, well, you're just making an excuse for Daniel Jones. No, I'm not. And Daniel Jones is a turnover machine. That is who he is. 40 turnovers in 28 games. You know what's funny, Ethan? Is last night after the game, I was looking up stats. And I use StatMuse a lot now. And I was looking up most turnovers by a quarterback since 2018, right? Mm. And I'm like, oh, Daniel Jones is 10th. That's not bad. Right, like there's 9 other quarterbacks that have turned the ball over more than them. Then I remembered, wait a second, he was drafted in 2019. then I went to 2019, and obviously he was first. Mm-hmm. He turns the ball over a lot. It is a problem. This is his third year. there's no reason to think that he's going to, outside of wishful thinking and blind optimism, which, by the way, is a hell of a drug for sports fans.
Yes, it is. Stronger
than cocaine. There is no reason for anybody to think in his third year, after what we saw in the preseason, what we saw yesterday, that it's going to change. He's going to commit turnovers. Some might not be his fault. But he's going to commit turnovers that in killer moments. At the goal line, he'll throw an interception. Team is driving in need of a score. He's going to fumble. It's going to happen. It is expected. Everyone at some point in the game yesterday knew it was coming.
I literally called it 60 seconds before it happened. Right? Literally 60 seconds.
Yeah. Everyone knew it was coming. And it happened. And this is something we need to expect going forward. We should know that there's no evidence that it's going to get better. And look, the Giants, this is a big year for Daniel Jones. It's been repeated over and over and over again. The reason why there's so much pressure on this team is not just because, you know, they spent money. A third year for a quarterback is the year where they're supposed to make the jump. If they don't make the jump and you don't have that question answered of, do I have a franchise quarterback? Can I win a Super Bowl with this guy? Then you're sort of back to square one, where you have to start looking at, okay, what do I have to do? Do I have to draft another quarterback? Do I have to bring in another quarterback? And I think that so far, I mean, it's only a game, but the answer to that question is no. The quarterback position is a problem for the Giants. We can't sugarcoat it, right? Is it all Daniel Jones' fault? No, obviously not. There's blame to go around across the table. But the Giants right now have a lot more questions than they have answers in a year where they're looking to get a lot of their questions answered.
That was well put. Wow.
You like that?
Well, it was a good ending right there. So one thing that I will say, and this is – I hate that I even need to clarify this, but I'm not absolving Jason Garrett of any blame here, right? I think he is the number one culprit right now, has the biggest target on and the hottest seat. A lot of people, I'll say in the offseason at the end of last year, liked to point to how Daniel Jones cleaned up his turnovers towards the end of the season, where he wasn't throwing a lot of interceptions. He was still fumbling the ball. This year, in the first game, no interceptions, but he fumbled the ball in a key moment. We lament the fact that Jason Garrett's system is not working. It is not built for the modern-day NFL. But part of me cannot help but to ask how much of this and the lack of deep shots is either, one, due to strictly Jason Garrett's offensive philosophy, or two, the coaching staff's complete lack of trust in Daniel Jones not to turn the ball over while going beyond 15, 20 yards, right? I think that there's probably blame on both sides there, both for Daniel Jones and Jason Garrett.
I'm going to answer your question, by the way.
I just want to say one more point.
Go ahead.
Right?
Yeah.
The thing is, I would much rather him make those turnovers being aggressive than getting strip sacked and fucking diving forward on first down, Weiss. It was first down. Like, he had 5 or 6 yards already. Just slide, bro. Like, you can get those remaining yards on second, third, and fourth down.
You probably would have drawn a penalty too.
I mean, yeah, like you didn't need to risk that. But I would much rather him be making those mistakes by being a gunslinger than watching this bland offense. That's my issue, or one of many.
I think one of the things about Daniel Jones that we sort of liked was during his rookie season, the turnovers were there, but he was moving the ball. They were taking shots down the field. And we're not seeing that the last 2 years. And you said, well, maybe they don't have trust in Daniel Jones. Well, if that's the case...
That's a problem, of course. But I'm just trying to provide a little more context.
But if you look at the last 2 years, I don't think you and I would have been mad if they would have taken any quarterbacks that were picked right behind where they were picking, right?
Right.
They took a Justin Herbert in 2020. or if they took a Justin Fields last year or Mac Jones last year, I don't think any of us would have been, you and I would have been mad, but because the question has not been answered. But my, but what my thing is that if you don't, if you have doubt that this quarterback is limited in what he can do, first of all, I don't know how you can get that conclusion by watching his rookie season. If Joe Judge came into here, came into the Giants and watched Daniel Jones' first year, which I'm sure he did, and he came away saying, I am only going to have success with this guy if I'm super conservative and I play this bland style of offense, well, then that, to me, that's the wrong takeaway to have, because we saw Daniel Jones in his rookie year turn the ball over, but moving the ball downfield, putting the ball in the end zone. What we're not seeing under Jason Garrett is the moving the ball, the touchdowns, they're not there. But guess what? He's still turning the ball over. So the conservativeness is not really helping eliminate the turnovers. It's just helping to eliminate what I think Daniel Jones' strength is, which is that gunslinger mentality, pushing the ball down the field, you know, being aggressive. And I think, look, to me,
your only good deep shot of the game should not be on an offsides free play.
It's ridiculous. Let me tell you something. Yesterday I had the Giants game on my iPad on the Sunday ticket, and I had Red Zone on there. And Red Zone, a lot, the late afternoon games, they were showing a lot of the Cleveland and
of course
Kansas City game, right?
Yeah.
And I'm watching this, which is this being the Giants game, and I'm looking up and I'm watching the Chiefs and Browns, and I'm saying to myself, am I watching the same sport? like this is completely different than what, like, this, I feel like I'm watching two different sports, because the Giant offense is just so abysmal. And to me yesterday, and I don't know what your evaluation of the offensive line is, I thought the offensive line, well, you and I talked about this, it wasn't great.
We actually texted each other at the same time.
Right. It wasn't good, but it wasn't like a complete liability. Like, it didn't handicap the Giants from doing what they wanted to do. They could still push the ball down the field if they wanted to. The fact that the offensive line wasn't a liability and it didn't handicap the offense, and the fact that the only real shot down the field came on a broken play where the Broncos jumped off sides, to me, that just shows like how broken this system is. Like, it just shows how there's so much fundamentally wrong with Jason Garrett's system.
Yep. And yeah, absolutely.
And we'll talk about the defense. There's a lot to talk about the defense. But one of the things I want to point out, momentum is a real thing, regardless if you want to say or not. The Giants had a nice touchdown drive led by Sterling Shepard. Got the pass, scored a touchdown, team goes up. Denver goes down the field, and Logan Ryan commits that awesome turnover that he had where he stripped the ball out of the Broncos tight end. I thought it was Noah Fant, but I guess it wasn't. It was the backup tight end. And Giants recover. I know they're at their four-yard line. And there's about 4 minutes left. The Giants have, I think they have two timeouts. My point is they have an eternity to put something together. To me, right, given the emotion of this game, right, like let's understand. The reason why I picked the Giants to win this game, part of the reason why, is, and I'm being all, no jokes, like all jokes aside, it's been a rough year and a half, right? And I hate to get emotional on people, but it's been a rough year and a half for New York, New Jersey, with the pandemic and then the floods and obviously the 20th anniversary of 9/11. Like, it's been an emotional time for New York. I thought coming into today with fans being back in the stadium, the Giants would come out and they would play with a sense of emotion, and there would be this fire in them to just come out, put on a show, and send, you know, people home happy.
It's a great point.
You're up 7-3. You just got a great turnover. It wasn't by luck. It was a great play by Logan Ryan. You have the ball, right? This is the time where you like you have a chance to go up 14-3, put together a nice drive before the half. Like, you be aggressive here. This is the time where you are aggressive. You're opening up your playbook. I know you're backed up at your four-yard line, right? And I'm not saying be reckless with the ball. I'm not saying that, right? But this was the time for the Giants to sort of Be aggressive. Bring Saquon in. I know you got him on a snap count, but try to run some plays from
him. That's another thing I want to discuss.
Kadarius Toney, yeah. We talked about it. He's great with the ball in his hands. Get the ball in his hands. You paid Kenny Galladay this money. Get the ball in Galladay's hands. They came out. They had a jumbo formation, ran a draw with Devontae Booker. Then I think they threw an out
route. Elijah Penny.
And then on third down, they basically gave up, and it was a pass to the line of scrimmage to Kyle Rudolph, who
either 2 yards, and that's it.
Yeah. Either he's not healthy or he's not. And then they just punted the ball, and guess what? Denver gets the ball, comes right down the field, scores a touchdown. Like, those are important moments of a game, right? Another moment was you get that deep shot, right? First drive of the game to Darius Slayton. You're in field goal range. That should be a guaranteed 3 points right there, right? If I'm the coach, I'm like, okay, this is my first drive of the game. I just hit a big play. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to come out again. Let's try to push the ball again down the field. Let's have a 2-3 play drive where we score a touchdown, really get the crowd going. What do? They run an end around with Kadarius Toney, which was so expected. He ran right to Von Miller. They ran right in the direction of Von Miller, right?
Yeah.
and then Daniel Jones throws an errant pass, and it's incomplete, and they're out of field goal range. Like, you don't lose a play. Like, you don't lose a game on one play. You can't win a game on one play. But these are the type of moments that you lose momentum, you give Denver an extra drive, and Teddy Bridgewater, we'll talk about the defense, but Teddy Bridgewater just sat there, and he was playing 7-on-7 the entire time, and he had himself a ball game. But those are moments in the game where it's very important for understand the situation. And the Giants, for whatever reason, don't understand the situation. And it cost them yesterday.
Back to the Garrett philosophy real quick.
Yeah.
And this was a stat from our good friend Justin Pennick, Talking Giants podcast. Really good stuff. You guys should give him a listen. Him and Bobby. I believe the stat was on the 8 times the Giants ran the ball on 1st and 10. And I want to say that this excludes the garbage time drive. So on the 8 times they ran the ball on 1st and 10 when the game actually mattered, they averaged a smidge over 2 yards per carry. That's unacceptable. Yeah. And on the plays where they threw on first down, they averaged 8 yards. The philosophy is just so ass backwards for the modern NFL. Forget about the route concepts and them drafting Kadarius Toney and paying Kenny Galladay. I'm not saying that stuff doesn't matter. It matters a lot. But when you just boil it down to the simple shit, it blows my mind that there are people like Jason Garrett who get paid to be offensive coordinators in the NFL that do the same thing and expect different results. Jason Garrett thinks that he has the 2017 Cowboys offensive line and Zeke Elliott. He does not. He has a much worse offensive line and a running back who is wearing ballet shoes instead of football cleats. Okay? You just cannot keep pounding the ball up the gut on first and 10 and expect to be successful. You just cannot do it. Throw the ball on first down. Get 4, 5, 6, 7 yards. Then you can run on 2nd and 3rd down, especially if you're in midfield and opposing territory. There's nothing more that I would love than setting up like a 3rd and 2 or a 3rd and 1 or a 4th and 1 on Denver's like 42. On Denver's 35, like those, like that's what you're talking about, momentum. Like these are you. It's not just when you have the chance and you have the momentum and you blow it. It's what you can do to set yourself up for those moments. And the Giants just don't do it. It's so frustrating. I'm like beside myself. Like we cannot keep watching the Jason Garrett brand of football for week one. We got 17 game schedule for 17 more weeks. Or 16 more weeks, no bye, with the bye. But you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I can't keep doing it.
No.
It doesn't pass the eye test. It doesn't pass the math test. It doesn't work. It does not work.
And I looked this up in the offseason too when there were talks about what the Giants were practicing. Two of the most low percentage plays on offense, historically speaking, running on 2nd down.
My favorite, and
the other one is those back shoulder fades and those
to the end zone.
Fades.
Yeah,
Jason Garrett on that one drive when they got into the red zone and they needed a touchdown, he ran. He ran on second down, gained a yard.
Mm-hmm.
And then on fourth down, threw that back shoulder goal line
to Galladay.
To Galladay.
I don't even know I'm sure that was the intention. It didn't even look like a fade.
I don't know what it was. It just looked like it, but like, I don't know why.
It was basically everyone run to the end zone and turn around. Yeah. And everyone was
caught. Just go back. Forget about the play call. Just go back. Yeah. I put this out there. Just look at the route concepts. First of all, the two guys on the left side, on the opposite side of the field where the ball went, they didn't even finish their route. They essentially just gave out. Like, they were like, it's almost like they knew the ball wasn't coming to them.
Yep.
But this is the problem you have. I mean, there's something fundamentally wrong with this guy's offense. I have my doubts on whether or not, I would have to go back and look, but I don't even think it worked when he was calling plays. I think they were just, like you said, uber talented. But 17 games, I cannot watch this. And people say, well, you can't, what does firing Jason Garrett do? Well, we can't change an offense. The time to upgrade personnel, the time to fix your offensive line, like this is what I told people when we did that podcast about cutting, you know, last week, was they weren't going to fix their offensive line on the day of cuts where teams had to get to 53 men on their roster. The time to fix their offensive line was in March and April. They didn't do that. The time for the Giants to fix their offensive philosophy was in January and February after last season. They chose to stick with Jason Garrett. Why I'm still a proponent of firing Jason Garrett is because, aside that his philosophy sucks, his play calling sucks too.
Right.
So it's a double whammy. So, and I'm not sitting here saying Freddie Kitchens coming in and calling plays is going to make the Giants world beaters on offense. No. But what it's going to do, I think, is it's going to help their play calling. We'll at least get an upgrade there. The offense might be bland. They still might struggle. It's not going to fix. It's probably not going to fix anything. But at least I know I'm not going to waste an entire year watching this guy and basically giving myself no chance. Because I'm telling you, if they're calling plays the way they did last year, and they continue to call plays the way they did yesterday, it's going to be the same thing. It is going to be the same thing. I know they have better personnel on offense, but when you don't play to your player's strengths, you're essentially playing to their weaknesses. And that's what Jason Garrett is doing. And I'm telling you, 16 more games of this, I don't think I can take 16 more minutes of this garbage.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. And that's the main thing. And we all know that they're not going to fire Garrett. So really what it is just making him an obsolete, a literal clapper on the sideline to just stand there and clap, and you let Freddie Kitchens call the plays. That's it. Like that at this point is the best thing that you can do. It is. And I agree. I agree. People, what are you going to make Dan Jones learn a new offense? No, that time was January. Yes. The time for that was January. We are too far gone to install a brand new offense this season. The best that we can do is hope that there are more explosive plays in the playbook that Jason Garrett is just not calling, and let Freddie Kitchens open it up. That's it.
Yes, that's it. That's all. Typically, when teams fire their offensive coordinator midseason, they know the philosophies of a large reason why. Play calling plays a role as well. But when they do in the hopes of really opening up their playbook and seeing what they have that hasn't been shown. So that's why I think firing Jason Garrett, realistically speaking, I think they're going to give him at least the first four games. So I don't know. I don't want to speculate on when a change could happen.
The 10-day break after Washington football team if they lose.
I think they give him the first 4 weeks of the season. But it's bleak, man. It's not going to get better. You can bring in any type of personnel you want to, but if this is the philosophy and this is the type of play calling we're going to see, doesn't matter, man. 13 points is not going to win you games in the NFL.
It was seven.
7 points is not going to win you games in the NFL. That's just the reality of the situation.
Yep.
So, can we talk about the defense?
Let's talk about the offensive line real quick while we're on the offensive side of the ball.
Sure.
Andrew Thomas was very serviceable. Blocking, he played a good game.
Pass blocking, he was. This was, like, I'm going to be honest. Like, you know this. Andrew Thomas was my favorite offense tackle in that draft, mm-hmm. primarily because there was a level of consistency with him. He didn't have a high ceiling as a Tristan Wirfs or a Mekhi Becton.
Yeah.
But he was just a consistently good offensive tackle, and I thought that, to me, give me that. Don't give me potential. Give me somebody that I've right. put on tape any given Saturday at the time, because in college, Saturday, that he can – he's good, and that's what he was. And I thought yesterday, just a consistent, good performance. There was no – nothing outrageous that's no. like, oh, my God, you know?
No,
and that's what you want to see.
Yeah, and we could be real for a second. He obviously wasn't facing Bradley Chubb, but that's not a right. knock on. That's not a knock on him. You got to face who you're going to face, and
play who you play.
Yeah,
yep.
And he was good yesterday. So yeah,
he was good yesterday.
Yeah, he definitely eased some preseason concerns.
I have a theory what the Giants should do with their offensive line. A wild idea. Nick Gates, I think, should be the starting right tackle.
Not the first person I've seen throw that out, yeah.
And Matt Skura, who actually was Daniel Jones' center at Duke, by the way. Mm. So there's some familiarity there.
I actually didn't know should that.
Be,
interesting.
Yeah, should be the center for the starting center for the Giants, or Billy Price, whoever they decide. I think that those are the best five offensive linemen. And Gates played tackle at Nebraska, where he went to school. I would hate to move him from center because I think he's done a decent job at center.
Yep.
And he's really grown into that spot. But I just think right through a tackle is such a liability, man. Nate Solder, he just looks finished. Matt Peart doesn't look like an NFL caliber offensive lineman yet.
Let me ask a question, and this could be an absolute disaster on Thursday night, yeah. given that if Matt Peart starts, he would wind up going up against Chase Young every snap
right.
for the most part. Right. Mm-hmm. Is there any part of you that just wants to say, fuck it, let's just give him a full game and see what happens, or you're done?
That's what they should – Nate Solder shouldn't be starting. Like
– Agreed, but you're already moving to moving Gates. Is there any right. part of you that wants to at least see Matt Peart full game action – against yes. someone like Chase Young?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. He should play. I mean, the only way you're going to find out if a tackle is good or not is if he goes against premier talent, right?
Yep.
Like, if he's going against reserves in a preseason game, you're not going to learn a lot. You got to see him go against the best of the best, right? Do I think Matt Peart is going to go out there and have a great game? No. But him standing on the sideline watching Nate Solder get abused is not going to teach him anything.
Yeah.
Him being on the field, getting those reps, that's what's more beneficial to him, and it's more beneficial to the Giants too, who are trying to get an evaluation on Matt Peart. And by the way, I hate these offensive line rotations.
It's not really a key to success.
I don't like it at all, especially with these young guys. You're trying to find continuity on your offensive line, constantly changing it up like that. It doesn't make sense to me at all. It made sense last year because it was really an evaluation year for the Giants, but year two, like, come on, like, are we still trying to figure out what the best combination is? Like, this is stuff you should have figured out in the offseason.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Defense. Actually, sorry. I keep doing this. Can we get some Sterling Shepard praise in the chat, please, as the youth streamers like to say?
I love the guy. Sterling Shepard, man, he is.
Listen, I understood people who I'm not going to knock people that wanted Shep traded just because, right. like, I get it. Like, he got the extension, but he can't stay healthy. But now, at the same time, like, he is clearly the safest receiver on this team. Daniel Jones' favorite weapon, and right. probably the only guy out there yesterday playing with an ounce of passion when he had the ball in his hands. Like,
yes.
Like, I would go to war for Sterling Shepard every day. One, because I just love him as a player. I love the fire. I love the passion. But I think that there is a serious argument to be made that him going out there every Sunday with the concussion issues that he has had, knowing that he is one bad hit away from, I'm being dead serious, like, a guy that should, I'm not saying he would, but should probably retire for the sake of his long-term health, that's a warrior. That's a guy I'll support any day of the week. So, hands up, clap, applause. Sterling Shepard, fucking awesome.
Great receiver.
Yes.
Really, really, really one of the best slot receivers in the NFL.
Absolutely. And a shame that we fucking wasted all that money on Golden Tate to yes. when really Shepard could have just, whatever. I digress.
Shepard's a great player. You're not going to hear me say anything bad about it. I think
great player.
He's,
all right.
He's the heart of the team.
He is. He is the heart of the team. Well put. Defense.
The defense.
So I'll start because that was probably my most underrated concern going into the season was the ability for this defense to repeat last year's performance, because I do think they overperformed. I'm not saying that they're a bad unit. I still think that they're a very, very solid NFL unit, but the weaknesses are very obvious, and that is the total lack of pass rush. And I feel like we've been saying this since JPP got shipped off. You can only cover for so long. And if you're not getting to the quarterback, I don't care how good your cornerbacks are, your safeties are. I don't care if you've got the best coverage linebackers in the game. People are going to find ways to get open. And Teddy Bridgewater did just that. He was, if it was man coverage, that offensive line was able to hold off fucking Leonard Williams and Azeez Ojulari long enough to find someone who was open. If it was zone, someone was finding the soft spot. It was a disaster. If you look at the time of possession for through the first three quarters, the Broncos, I think, literally had the ball for two full quarters, maybe more.
Yes, they did.
And
just about.
Maybe I think it was 2 seconds short was the exact statistic. But like, I don't care. You're not going to win football games like that for a million reasons. Like the bend but don't break can work, but not when time of possession is that lopsided. Your offense is on the side, and with as bad as the Giants are, you cannot afford for them to just sit there and get cold. Your defensive players get tired, and you start having to rotate lesser talented players in. I don't expect them to be as bad this past week throughout the course of the season. I'm just saying, I think fans that are just like, oh, it is what it is, nothing to worry about, that might be a bit understated. I'm still nervous about it. I was nervous a few weeks ago. I was nervous for week one, and I'm still nervous after week one.
Yeah, I have high hopes for Azeez Ojulari. I think we'll see him more and more as the season progresses. But I'm with you. Pass rush, it's a huge problem. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater is playing 7-on-7.
Yeah.
Drop back to pass. Jerry Jeudy. Drop back to pass, Noah Fant. Drop back to pass, KJ Hamler. Cortland Sutton. Melvin Gordon out of the backfield. I mean, he was practically playing 7-on-7. And kudos to Pat Shurmur. That is a real offensive coordinator right there. Talk about playing to your guy's strength. Did Teddy make plays off script? Absolutely. But pretty much everything you saw was Teddy being able to read the defense, Pat Shurmur calling plays to put his players in a position where they can be successful. And at the same time, he exploited the Giants' weakness, which was covering those tight ends, man crossing patterns. You talked about zone, find the soft spot. That's what an offensive coordinator does. And he did that. And kudos to Teddy and kudos to Pat Shurmur. They tore apart the Giants' defense. The Giants' defense could not get off the field on third down. The Broncos were 3-for-3 on fourth down, but at one point I think I looked at it, they were like 7-of-9 on third downs. And I'm like, and the two times they didn't get the third down.
I think they were also 3-for-3 on fourth down.
That's what I'm saying. The time that they weren't, the reason why they weren't 9-for-9 on third down is because the two times they went for a fourth down and they got it. So it was as easy as looking good for the Denver Broncos and the Giants. You said it, look. If you cannot rush the quarterback and you cannot pressure the quarterback and he can just sit in that pocket and just wait and wait and wait, they're going to beat you. And James Bradbury had a horrible game. I looked at the PFF statistics, but even before that, I knew that there was a lot of receptions where he was in the vicinity.
Yeah, when Bridgewater when he was charged with being targeted, Teddy Bridgewater was 6-of-7 with a passer rating of like 144.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yes. And they really went after Jabril Peppers a lot. Peppers was outmanned against Noah Fant, who's really, really – that's a big dude. Noah Fant is a large man.
Massive.
Every time he was standing next to Jabril Peppers, I thought it was really like a father and son picture. It was bad. And Yeah, the Giants defense. I'm not as worried because I have faith in Patrick Graham, and I think there is talent on the defensive side of the ball where they can – they'll make the adjustments, right? Like, the level of concern with the offense and defense is completely different. I think the defense will make their adjustments. Does that – like, you talk about taking a step back, right? Last year, people I saw – well, they were a top five unit. The Giants defense was not a top five unit. It was top 10, really, like somewhere between that 8 to 12 range,
yep,
if we're being fair. But they were never top 5. I think this year they'll be in that same 8 to 12 range. Maybe they'll be more close to 8 than 12, but I still think they're going to be a good defense. But yesterday was not encouraging at all. I mean, if Logan Ryan doesn't turn that ball over, Denver scores a touchdown, right? Like, we're talking giving up 34 points and the moving the ball at will. So it was a very discouraging performance by the defense.
Yep.
But I'm not worried yet.
I think that's fair. Like, I'm still nervous, but like, I'm not talking about regressing to, you know, being a bottom five unit in the league. Like, yeah, as bad as they were at stopping the Broncos on third and fourth down, that's also like an insanely over-efficient average for the Broncos.
Yes.
Like, I mean, kudos to them. Like, they did it. Like, I'm not trying to take credit away from them, but like, no, like you're going to see regression there. Like, you're just not going to convert that high of a percentage all season long.
Well, the thing is, third down is supposed to be your pass rush down, where you bring in your pass rushers, especially those third and sevens and third and eights, which was what the Broncos were in a lot of the times. When you're not able to generate a pass rush and you're playing man coverage, it's easy to beat. And the Broncos did that. Do I think the Giants are going to be that bad on third down going forward? No, I do not.
Yep.
I don't think they will be. We'll see. It was discouraging.
Especially because there are a lot of similarities for the Broncos with the upcoming matchup to,
yes, there is,
Washington football team. So,
yes. So, Washington Thursday. But can I say one thing?
You can say whatever you'd like, babe. Yep.
Before we talk about Washington, you had that great four-stage thing last week, right?
Thanks.
So I was doing a – I was just thinking with myself. Actually, I have a life before I admit this. Have a life. I was reading my Twitter mentions. I think one night I couldn't sleep, so I was just on Twitter. And I was reading my mentions, right? Like, I went back as far as a little bit before the Patriots preseason game.
Mm-hmm.
And there's three types of fans across the board, not just Giants fans.
Here we go. Okay.
There's three types of fans. There's the one type who are just always miserable.
Okay.
Like, the Giants could win a Super Bowl. Like, they could win the Super Bowl and then a month later lose like an assistant to some job and they just be miserable about that.
Yeah.
Like, how can we let this assistant go, right?
Yeah.
Like, those exist. Now, unfortunately, they're hard to see because the Giants are miserable right now. So those are tough to come by because the Giants don't have success,
mm-hmm,
right? Then there's the type of fans, and this is what I sort of categorize you and myself, is they're the ones that are realistic about the situation that told you, hey, listen, drafting a running back 2 overall is not the right decision. Paying Nate Solder all that money, he's not a guy I would make that type of commitment to. Daniel Jones is not a guy I would take at 6. You know, Dave Gettleman really has an outdated philosophy. They're realistic about the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, some of them might be a little bit optimistic, like I am sometimes. Sometimes maybe people might be a little bit too pessimistic, like you sometimes are, right?
Sure.
But for the most part, we're on that straight path where we understand the state of the organization.
Yep.
Then the third type, and this is a great one, I saw this in my mentions, are the bootlickers. Right? I loved it when I was reading them. So there were two guys going at it back and forth, and I was tagged in it. And they were, the one guy called the other guy a bootlicker, and I thought that was awesome. John Mara bootlicker. These are the ones that and you know them and I know them, and they're typically the same people that I see always in my mentions. Those are the ones that everything is great. Hey, the record is bad, but that's Jerry Reese's fault. Dave Gettleman is doing a fantastic job. Daniel Jones is the franchise quarterback. The offensive line is great. Don't believe anything you see. Blah, 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 right? What I've begun to notice, and I started realizing this after the Patriots preseason game, because there were so many people in my mentions who were like giving up on this team. And you mentioned this earlier in the podcast too. This fan base, regardless which one of those three categories you fit under, are united on being fed up with what the Giants are showing us. And it's interesting because Joe Judge and a lot of the players talked about this yesterday, about fans leaving early and the booing. And I think the Giants organization are well aware that even the fans that lick your boots and will run circles for you and will come to the game regardless and will buy merchandise regardless of the situation, you are losing them by the dozens as the losses pile up.
I agree.
Yesterday in my mentions,
I saw a lot of them starting to flip.
Yeah, there was no talk of it's early in the season. This is Saquon. No, it was people fed up with the organization, and it was more eye popping to me last week when a lot of those bootlickers, right, as that Twitter user put it, were asking me questions about when we fire Dave Gettleman. Remember we were doing the questions last week, and everyone was like talking about the offseason. I'm like, I'm not answering these questions right now. Let's play a game first. You are seeing a fan base, again, regardless where you are on those three levels.
The spectrum.
Right, on that spectrum. They are coming together, and they are united on being fed up with the state of this organization and the losing.
Yes.
I can tell you right now, we used to joke and say the Giants season is over by Halloween. If the Giants lose to Washington on Thursday, right, which they very well could.
Four and a half point underdogs.
Yeah, that Wednesday home game against Atlanta, who, by the way, is also a bad team, that could be a ghost town in the Meadowlands. And it's not even the first day of fall yet.
Yep. So I will supplement your little, I don't even know what to call it. It wasn't really a rant. I mean, it was well put.
It was an observation that I'm saying.
Your observation, yes. I noticed the same thing. After the game, yes, and even this morning, and again, I should preface this, I have a life. I promise.
Yes. Yes.
But there are a few people in the Giants fan base who, if you're going to qualify them as the quote-unquote bootlickers, who are louder than others, who, you know, you see them on the timeline all the time, whether you follow them, you don't follow them, you know, call it a little mental health check. And I saw a lot of them this morning, and even after the game yesterday, really turn on the organization. And it's good to see, because the fan base is like united in their frustration, but at the same time, it does still annoy you, because,
of course,
like you said, like the group of fan that we probably fall into is, yeah, we're doom and gloom, but there's good reason for it. And it's that the quote unquote bootlicker type of fan that spends all offseason telling you, stop being so negative, let's see how it plays out.
Great.
Yeah. But the moves that are being made are very obviously bad. There are plenty of moves that I will say, yeah, like let's let it play out. Andrew Thomas, for example, he hasn't really shown that much yet to where you would be like, oh, definitely worth like a fourth round pick.
I'm comfortable, yeah.
But I was behind it, right? They made that pick. Right. I was like, yes, like we should see how this plays out. Joe Judge was obviously not my first choice. I was all aboard the Matt Rhule train. But when they hired him, I said, okay, like let's see it play out. Like the guy hasn't really proven much, so I have nothing to really base it off of. Maybe he's like the next big thing.
Right.
But it's when the moves are obviously bad and the results then show that they're bad. It's like, okay, where were you? Like 2 months ago. Right. You were shitting on me for saying that this was a bad move, and now you're the one that's crying on game day. Meanwhile, we fully expected this.
Right.
So it's annoying, but it is what it is. We can't really do much about it. So
right. I'm just glad that people are starting to realize the bullshit. And and maybe it took them 10 years of losing or 7 years of losing, however long it was, for them to realize that, okay, I can't lick the boots anymore.
Right.
So what I'm interested to see is, as this season progresses, and if they continue to lose more games, how much louder
the noise gets,
the noise gets. Because not only is it getting louder, like on Twitter, social media, and fans in the stands, but you are starting to realize that people in the organization notice it, and they're talking about it. That means that it is something that's being brought up.
But Mara is notoriously sensitive about that. And it's why he and Gettleman have, well, not name names, but specific writers that go out and do their bidding. And this is
By the way, they've already begun doing that as well.
Yes. But that was the opposite, though. Because, all right, fine. If we're going to call it a specific instance
That was someone starting to do the dirty work for somebody else and basically play damage control. Like, hey, I didn't make this pick.
I could see that. Yeah. So, but again, without naming names, like, that's why they have those people that do that for them. It's not like, you know, they want to maintain relationships, sure, but Mara is sensitive to it. He
very much.
Yeah. So
he does not like empty chairs. He will throw them.
He will throw all of them. He'll start ripping stadium chairs out if he has to.
Yes.
But anyway, let's move on to Washington football team. Because listen, it's crazy. Like, we're 45-ish or so minutes into the podcast. Like, yeah, like, we're doom and gloom. We're negative. We don't like what we see. That'll be tenfold if the Giants lose to fucking Taylor Heinicke. I do not know. And the Giants are bigger underdogs against Heinicke than they were against Denver. Now, I'm going to have, like, people who are familiar with how odds makers do things. I understand that home field advantage is worth X amount of points.
Right.
And the Giants were at home versus going into Washington. But it's the line would still be comparable on a neutral field, actually, I think. But I digress. The Falcons looked awful yesterday, as predicted, because they are literally the 2018 Giants. Like, literally a mirror image.
They might be worse.
Maybe worse, but they are literally, from a full philosophical standpoint, the 2018 Giants. So now the Giants get dominated at home by a formidable defense, Teddy Bridgewater, pretty good weapons, whatever. Now they have Taylor Heinicke, who in theory should be an easier opponent, still has weapons. Washington football team may have a better defense than Denver, at least from, like, a well-rounded standpoint, whatever. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you that there isn't a world in which the Giants are 2-1.
Absolutely not.
It's entirely possible. Yes. As fucked up as it is, as bad as it all is,
yes,
it's possible. Which
by
is
by the end
insane.
Of September, they could be 2-1.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. I don't think that's going to happen. Because I have no faith in this offense anymore.
So what do you think happens against Washington?
I think they lose to Washington.
Okay. Against Taylor Heinicke.
In my preseason prediction, first of all, I'll say something about Taylor Heinicke. In my preseason prediction, I thought they would beat Denver, but they would lose to Washington.
Okay.
Like, I had them winning 10 games, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to change my – I'm not one of those people that are going to do it after one game, although it's looking very bleak. But I had them beating Denver and losing to Washington. I'm not going to change that. I think they're going to lose. And I don't think it's that much of a downgrade from Fitzpatrick to Heinicke. I actually think Heinicke might have higher upside.
Okay. I mean, I obviously disagree with that. We don't have to debate it.
He had a great playoff game. He didn't play bad yesterday when he came in. I thought Washington didn't give that game away, but they really had a chance to...
Well, Gibson's fumble, but yeah.
Yeah, to win that game. They didn't do that, right? There is a scenario where, if you were to ask me, hey, by When do they play Atlanta? September 26th. On September 27th, Monday, do you think the Giants, it's more likely the Giants are going to be 2-1 or 0-3? I'm going to say it's more likely they're 0-3.
Okay. Like, given those two outcomes, sure.
Realistically, I think they're going to be 1-2, but I do not see them winning these next two games.
Right.
I don't. I think they are – they're just not, like, from an offensive standpoint, man, like, people don't understand. When you cannot move the ball and you cannot score points, I don't care how bad the other team's quarterback is. You will not win. Like, you will not win in this league. And I think Atlanta yesterday, new offense, I think their offense is going to be better. I don't think it's going to be a bad offense. I think Arthur Smith is going to do a good job. You know, it's their first game together. I think Matt Ryan is still capable of playing quarterback. I think Calvin Ridley is still going to be a good receiver. Kyle Pitts is still going to be, you know, a weapon for the Falcons. They're going to be better offensively. I don't think their defense is going to be better, but they're going to be better offensively. And they will be able to score points. And the Giants can't score points. And there's no reason for us to believe that they will be able to score points. Not with this play caller and this offense. So, yeah, I know I picked them to go 10-7, but look, after week one and what I think is going to happen in week two, I really have no confidence in this team right now. Not offensively. And I don't think their defense is going to be able to hold teams to under 20 points. And they're going to win games 14-10 or 17-14 or 19-17 like some of the scores we saw last year. It's not going to happen.
Curious what the total is. Let me check. Like, I know that the Giants are 41. 43, open to 43, now 41. So
short week, Washington starting, a different quarterback. Both teams have good defenses. I could see that game being 20-16 or whatever, right? Like
something like that.
You know, it's that could happen, but look, I'm just being honest about the situation. If Saquon was limited on Sunday, what makes people think he's going to be a 30 touches?
By the way, I think is like
it's the stupidest thing in the world. I think it's ridiculous. I don't understand the point of playing him. Like
play him or don't play him. Like yes. and they should have played him. Like I'm sorry. Yes. Like the most again, like I'm talking as a fucking podcaster here. Like the most serious knee injury I've had is I tore my meniscus and like I had surgery and I rehabbed and I'm fine. But like we're talking it's almost been a full calendar year from when he tore his ACL. And it wasn't like a tricky ACL tear, like it was a full ACL tear. He had a partially torn meniscus. I don't know if they even needed to repair that. It depends on and I speak from my experience, like it depends on which direction the meniscus is teared, like what they wind up deciding to do, whether they just like snip it out and have you rehab it or they try to sew it together and whatever. And he had the MCL sprain, which really didn't require work. But like I'm reading stats that the risk of tearing your ACL after 9 weeks of recovery and rehab is no different than, or sorry, 9 months of recovery and rehab is no different than 12 months of recovery and rehab. Like it's not like this guy tore his hamstring. It's not like a soft tissue injury where like if he overdoes it, he's like gonna come up hobbled again. Like he's like all we saw this fucking offseason from his Instagram and the Giants account is how hard he's rehabbing, like how hard he's pushing himself. Like I'm sorry, like this guy should have been fucking ready for 20 carries and 10 targets week one, or they just shouldn't have fucking played him. Right. Because, like I said earlier, Jason Garrett still thinks that this is the 2017 Cowboys. I'm sorry. Saquon is not going to run directly up the gut and get you 5 chunk yards at all. That's not the fucking running back he is. It's ridiculous. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think either you play him or you don't play him. But if you play him, you're playing him with the mindset that I'm going to get this guy the ball 25 times. Because that's what they need
to
do.
He's not a rookie. He knows the offense. Like right. It's not like Kadarius Toney. Where he's not got like, right? It's not that. No. It's absurd.
Yes, I agree with you. And with that said, if he was limited in week one, I don't think, it's weird for me to say, okay, limited on Sunday, but a lot of us, all of a sudden on a Thursday, he's going to be ready for 25 touches, 30 touches.
Yeah.
I don't see how that makes sense. if he can handle 25 touches on Thursday, but he couldn't handle it four days prior.
Like these are all must-win games.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't, like I said, part of the reason why I don't think they're going to win on Thursday is because they do not. I think Saquon is still going to be limited. Kenny Golladay and Kadarius Toney are still coming on slow. They had injuries in training camp, right? So I don't see, like, all of a sudden, okay, everybody's healthy. I don't see that. And like you said, man, they're going against a very, very good defensive line. They have two good pass rushers, right? Denver missed Bradley Chubb.
Yeah.
Or else who knows what would have happened. But these guys have got two good pass rushers in Chase Young, who going against Nate Solder or Matt Peart is a nightmare for the Giants. And then on the other side, by the way, you got to worry about Montez Sweat. And then they got two really, really good interior guys that can cause havoc too. So this is a really, really tough matchup for the Giants, and one that I don't think they're going to win.
Yeah.
I don't. I'm sorry.
I mean, I agree. If you're asking me, will they? I don't think they will.
I don't.
But I do think that it's possible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, they've beaten Washington four straight times. Or five straight times. Something like that.
I know Taylor Heineke is starting at quarterback, but like,
come on. Yeah, so it's definitely not in the right. And I don't think Washington is going to. I don't think Washington's going to be a playoff team this year. Right? Like, they're not this great team. They can definitely lose to the Giants on Thursday. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
We want to go to questions?
Sure.
All right. So I did it last week. I don't know if you want to do it this week.
Yeah, I can do it this week.
Let's do it.
Oh, man. And I'll start with this one from Harry. How do you reconcile any trust in Judge as head coach when he continues to employ Garrett?
I wanted to mention this on the podcast.
Okay.
Joe Judge's honeymoon phase is over.
Yeah, yes, agreed.
It's over. Like,
we didn't talk about the challenge.
Yeah.
It's fucking bullshit, dude.
Yeah, coaches make mistakes. He took responsibility for it. Okay, whatever. If I see it again, then I'm going to, like, fucking flip out. But, like, okay, whatever. You made a mistake. All right, fine. But the honeymoon phase is over. Like, you're telling me Joe Judge, like we talked about in the offseason, he has input on – personnel, and he can make changes. And if he went to ownership and said, I can't work with Dave Gettleman, Dave Gettleman would be replaced. But he can't fire Jason Garrett?
Yeah.
Fine, he didn't hire him, but he can't fire him now?
And now he
fired the offensive line coach four weeks into the season.
Right. But again, like, I don't think the offensive line coach was Mara saying, hey, you have to fucking hire this guy. I think Jason Garrett was, hey, you have to fucking hire this guy. Right. What you can do is take away the play calling responsibilities. Which, yes, I think would still keep everyone at least amicable, but this question is absolutely right. Like, I don't understand how you can just continue having this faith in Judge when he's yet to really prove anything as a head coach and is going to continue rolling out the same dog shit offense week in and week out. Right. The honeymoon phase is over. Get it together.
There's something fundamentally wrong
if
you're watching that offense and saying it's okay.
Yep. And then the next question from John is basically the same thing. Like, after yesterday's game, how much has our confidence decreased in Judge? Yeah, it's decreasing by the game. It is.
Yes. I don't see how it's going to increase.
I don't see how it can't not be decreasing by the game.
Right.
From Nick. Nick, this is funny because Nick actually asked us the question last week about going through the Bears' schedule. Did you watch the Bears game last night?
I did, yeah.
I didn't think their offense looked that bad, honestly.
No. They didn't look bad.
Look better than the Giants. I will say, I am happy for Matt Stafford. He was having a lot of fun last night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're a good team. They might be the second best team in the NFC.
It's possible. Yeah.
They actually might be the best. But
I don't know about
I'm not ready to explain that take yet.
No, but they're good. And Stafford is just such an upgrade.
Yes.
Over Goff. But yeah, I did watch the Bears game. Go Rams. At least we have that to look forward to each week, is just rooting for the Giants and rooting for whoever's playing the Bears.
Yes.
I still remember there were people who were telling me they thought I was crazy for thinking that the Bears pick would be top 10. Like, I thought that it was basically like a no-doubter.
Yeah, to me, it is a no-doubter. They have a really tough schedule.
Not an easy schedule. I think we projected them probably like four wins, six-win ceiling. Yeah. Like, it's a top 10 pick.
And they lost another starter on the offensive line yesterday, too. So
yeah.
They just keep losing guys.
They lost four left tackles. Could you imagine if the Giants lost? I don't even think the Giants have four tackles.
I don't think they're capable of finding four left tackles.
Yeah. From Monty, do you have any confidence in Freddie Kitchens, Russ Callaway, or Rob Sale to step in and fix the offense? Not fix the offense. I think we discussed that earlier. Not fix the offense, but to at least get more aggressive with the play calling that they have in this scheme. Open up the playbook. I mean, do you want me to like address any of these off-season questions? Because we're still getting a bunch of them.
There will be so much time for us to talk about the off-season.
What prospects do you like?
Don't ask me what prospects I like. Jeez, man. Oh, I'll tell you guys a funny story.
Okay.
All right. I'll tell you guys a funny story. So last night, I was watching the Giants game. It was out of reach, late fourth quarter. My wife came in the room, my sort of office where I watch these games, and she goes, "Dinner's ready." And I'm like, "Okay, I'm coming." And she took a peek at the scoreboard, and she cracked her joke and she
laughed. My fiance did the exact same thing.
So I go downstairs, and I sit at the table, and she goes, "What happened to your team?" Like she understands football, and she watches
We had the exact same experience last night.
And she's and she's asked me this before, right? And she goes, "You know, what's wrong with your team? You know, why they won the Super Bowl? I remember they won the Super Bowl, like, you know, in 10 years ago. But, you know, they had so much success, and they were so good. And, you know, what happened?" And she knows Eli Manning, and she knows all the great, great players, right? So she has some sort of awareness. And I said, "You know, they suck." And she's like, "Well, what happened to them?" I'm like, so I'm thinking, I'm like, I've explained this to her in the past about like,
yeah, but how do you, you know, you can't, it's so tough ownership. To boil it down.
So here's what I said. So this was my response. My brother was sitting there with me too. And I go, "Why do you think JCPenney went out of business?" Right? And then she goes, "Well, you know, they didn't adapt to the new way of people shopping and Amazon and online and blah, blah, blah." I said, "That's exactly why the Giants are bad. They have yet to adapt to the new way of life." And that's exactly what my brother said. He goes, "Wow, that's amazing. It's so amazing."
Yeah.
I just thought that was a funny little thing to share with you guys. It was an interesting conversation I had. She sort of got it. She's like, "Well, why don't they?" And then she topped the conversation off. "Well, why doesn't Jeff Bezos buy the Giants?" And I'm like, "Okay, now we're getting more complex here." So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My fiance was like, "Oh, like they only scored 7 points." I was like, "Yeah, the quarterback sucks." She's like, "Oh, why don't they just get a new one?" I'm like, "Oh, you know, if it was that easy."
Let me go on Amazon right now.
Yeah.
Let me order one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it is. It's tough. And then you got to start, people start asking you questions and you're like, "Oh my God." I'm already getting texts like, "Hey, what do you think about the Oklahoma quarterback?" I'm like, "Listen, leave me alone.
Bro, I got people talking about Malik Willis. I got Sam Howell, Spencer Rattler. I got.
I don't want to do that right now.
Matt Corral is one of my guys. Whatever. We're not doing this. We've made it through basically the entire episode. of not doing this, so let's finish strong here.
You got them losing Thursday.
I got them losing Thursday.
Yeah, I think it's tough, but I said earlier, man, they lose Thursday. I think that Atlanta game is going to be a ghost town. Not a lot of people are going to show up. People were leaving early yesterday. I don't think they're going to come back if they're. You know what I'm saying? And everyone was telling me like. I actually had an interaction with a fan. He was like, "Yo, it took me like 3 hours to get home, and I live like, you know, 20 miles away from the stadium."
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Shit, you know, like, I don't blame you. You know, like, it's tough. It's tough."
Yeah, like Logan Ryan said, beat the traffic.
Exactly. Exactly. Shit gets out of hand, beat the traffic, right?
Anything else you want to discuss?
No, that's it.
Okay.
That's it. I think we touched on everything.
Yeah, we did. It was a lot.
It was.
All right.
All right.
Let's wrap it up then.
Next week.
Talk again next week. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN, Weiss at NYG Daily, The Block at Gotham SN. Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitch Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate us 5 stars. And we'll talk to you soon.
Talk next week.